Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. On today's show, we'll meet one of Minnesota's newest Yellow Ribbon companies, get an update from the Minneapolis VA Healthcare Center, and check in with the Minnesota National Guard's senior enlisted advisor. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Brigadier General Sean Mankey.
When people think about the military, they often think about service members deployed overseas. What is unique about the National Guard is their additional roles. During Super Bowl 52, more than 450 soldiers and airmen supported security operations and law enforcement agencies. In 2017, more than 110 Minnesota soldiers and airmen were activated for hurricane relief efforts in Texas, Puerto Rico, and the U.S. Virgin Islands. In June of 2017, the Minnesota National Guard supported the Minnesota State Patrol on locating three missing paddlers in the Boundary Waters canoe area. Also, in December of 2017, we opened our armories to several communities to shelter Minnesotans during extreme cold weather. With a force of more than 13,000 strong, we are proud to serve the great state of Minnesota and our nation.
Thank you, General Mankey. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. In today's show, we're going to talk about two research projects within the Minneapolis Adaptive Design and Engineering, or MADE, program at the Minneapolis VA Healthcare Center. And joining us is Dr. Christine Olney, Ph.D., RN, is a nurse scientist with the Minneapolis Adaptive Design and Engineering Program, the Minneapolis VA Medical Center System. Dr. Olney, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Oh, thanks for having me on the show today. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk to people about what we do.
Doctor, it looks like you are a PhD and a nurse and now a nurse scientist. You must have spent a few years in higher education to get started.
Oh, indeed I did. I did my undergraduate at Montana State. I'm an Iowa farm girl, actually. And after Montana State, I followed my husband for 20 years in the military. And after he retired, I went to South Dakota to get my master's degree and then down to Tampa, Florida to get my PhD from the University of South Florida. And continued my education actually through VA funding. I got received two postdoctoral awards, and that's really where my research started, was with the VA. And really took on a program of study with that work, looking at pressure injury prevention with spinal cord injury patients within the VA.
And Chris, when and how did you get to the Minneapolis VA?
Oh, boy. Thanks for asking that question. I was doing my research down in Tampa with the Tampa VA and actually was trying to recruit the Minneapolis VA to be a participant site in my study that I was writing, and our children, both of our daughters moved to Minneapolis, started having grandbabies, and I thought, well, maybe I better center myself out of Minneapolis and then ask the Tampa VA, Spinal Cord Injury Center, to participate in my studies from this place. And so it was really a motivation of opportunity and grandchildren, you know, having family, and it worked out just perfectly. We've been here since 2011, so we're very fortunate to be here. Of course, as you know, the Minneapolis VA is one of the best VAs in the nation, and I think our Spinal Cord Injury Center is definitely one of the best in the nation, if not the best.
Well, ma'am, we're glad to have you here taking care of our veterans here in Minnesota. We want to talk today a little bit about the MADE program, Minneapolis Adaptive Design and Engineering Program. Can you explain to us what that is and how that works?
Oh, absolutely. The MADE program really was started back in 2009. We have two incredible leaders, Dr. Andy Hansen. He is an engineer, was invited to join Dr. Gary Goldish, who was the director of the Spinal Cord Injury Unit back then. They wanted to build some devices per the request of ideas that were coming out of the clinicians and from the patients. And so between the two of them, Dr. Goldish and Dr. Hansen, they started building devices. And it's the ideas just keep coming forward from the patients and the staff about needs that they have of devices or adaptive devices that are needed for improving participation, you know, veterans' ability to participate in their normal activities and, you know, improving functions or preventing injury. These are the things that we really want to do, particularly get people out into the world and participating in the world.
We're speaking with Dr. Chris Olney, a nurse scientist with the Minneapolis Adaptive Design and Engineering Program at the Minneapolis VA on Minnesota Military Radio. And Dr. Olney, I hear you saying that as a result of requests from our veterans who have special needs for assistive devices to improve their quality of life, then you go back and try to figure out how can we do this better? Is that kind of where this starts?
Yeah, it's like that. It kind of depends on what the need is. For instance, one of the things that Dr. Hansen is working on right now is heel height for amputations. People who have amputations or women who have amputations, they like to wear high heels, and there's not a good way to do that. And he's developed a system that makes heels be interchangeable with the ankle that he provides for them. Another device that we have is a mobile standing wheelchair. So most standing wheelchairs don't move around, certainly not a manual one. And this device, just a person can stand up in it, move around while they're standing, and do it manually. And, of course, I'm going to talk about the two devices that I've been working on. Both came from ideas out of the spinal cord injury unit and work that Dr. Goldish initially started, and I took over both of those projects, and we got funding for them and funding from the VA, actually, to develop these devices, and both of the devices now have been translated to industry partners, and so I'm looking forward to sharing a little bit more about that.
Dr. Olney, we're going to get into those two devices you're working on in the second segment, but I think most of our listeners think of the Minneapolis VA as a hospital and a medical center, and a lot of them probably may not be aware that there's a lot of research that goes on out at Minneapolis VA, and I'm sure that you have to go out and gain some funding in order to do the projects that you're working on.
Oh, absolutely. When you're a scientist, you do a lot of grant writing, and we spend, the principal investigators or the PhDs spend a lot of time doing grant writing and chasing the money. I've been very, very fortunate that the VA has funded several of my studies. I'm very, very grateful for that. We also do write grants through the Department of Defense, through NIH, Minnesota provides a lot of funding for our studies also. We have higher education grants and local organizations. So we really ask a huge variety of organizations for funding. And we've been very fortunate in our MAID group in that we probably get close to 35% of our grant applications funded. And that's in our world, that's a really, really high number of, or high percentage of funding for requests. We're pretty good at it.
And ma'am, I think it's that all that research that happens at the Minneapolis VA and of course all the partnerships with University of Minnesota, the state of Minnesota, that makes the Minneapolis VA Medical Center one of the best in the country.
Well, we think so. We think that these collaborations that we've built have really made a difference. We really try to include in the research that we do the veteran. We actually say that we do veteran-centric research, where many times the research centers around an idea or a theme that may be out there that a researcher wants to discuss or study, and we look at the veteran, and the veteran tells us what they need, or the clinician who is working with the veteran, what they need to make life better. And so we are very veteran-centric. The veteran drives the research. They give us feedback on all the devices that we make. And I'll give you some examples in the next section of how they've driven our research.
Thank you, ma'am. We have to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to talk about two successfully translated devices that Dr. Olney has worked on at the Minneapolis VA. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Well, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In today's show, we've been talking to Dr. Christine Olney, PhD, RN, and a nurse scientist with the Minneapolis Adaptive Design and Engineering Program, also referred to as the MAID program, at the Minneapolis VA Medical Center. And, Doctor, before we went to break, we talked a little bit about the fact that you apply for some grants and you're part of a research program out there. And as a principal investigator, you spend some time looking for those funds so that you can work on these items that veterans need to assist them and improve their quality of life. And there are two, I think, we want to talk about today. And the first one was M-PACE. I understand that stands for Multi-Purpose Arm Cycle Ergometer. Now that's quite a title. Could you explain to me in English? What does that mean, ma'am?
And I'm going to correct you just a little bit. It's ergometer. Let's put the accent in a different space there.
Ergometer, okay.
I think ergometer works for a lot of people, but we call it an ergometer. So many people who have spinal cord injuries are very familiar with arm ergometers. And if you go to a gym, you probably have seen arm ergometers because it's really an upper body biking device. So if you can picture your legs going around, but just put it up at arm level and it's just cycling with the arms. And because many people who have a spinal cord injury are unable to use their legs on a bike, and in order to keep their body in a healthy condition, they use arm ergometer. So I'm going to tell you a little bit of background on what the motivation to develop this device was, and that is many times a person with a spinal cord injury who develops a really bad pressure injury, we call it a stage 3 or stage 4, they go through a surgical process called a flap surgery, and part of the recovery for the flap surgery is to be on bed rest from anywhere from 3 to 6 weeks afterwards, and I'm talking complete bed rest with the head of the bed down or at most up at a 10 degree grade, and so it's extraordinarily difficult to do that recovery, and it's very boring. And when Dr. Goldish was the spinal cord injury director back in 2009-10, he got to thinking about things that could, one, entertain a person, two, help keep them in good physical conditioning. We know that if a person lays on bed rest, this is NASA data, by the way, they keep deconditioned very, very rapidly, like about, I may be saying this wrong, but I think it's like 10% per week they lose of their strength. It might even be faster than that. It's just really fast deconditioning that occurs with bed rest. So his idea was, is how can we get exercise for this person who's laying absolutely flat in bed to exercise so that they don't lose their conditioning? And that was the genesis of the bike. They started out with bringing one of their old bikes from home in and putting it on a bedside table and moving it up and down and trying to get the patient to have access to it, where it's now developed to this wonderful frame that comes over the bed. It's very stable, and the ergometer is able to be lowered down to the patient to whatever level they're at, laying flat, and the patient is able to cycle. Now, in order to test whether or not this was a truly a viable option, if we were actually offering something that is worthwhile to the patient, we started a little study, and that is the study that I ran. And over a period of 5 years, we had 47 veterans who had this flap surgery opt to use the arm bike. And we don't let just anybody use it. I mean, they have to have meet certain criteria because we don't want to risk the surgical wound safety of it. And so we had about 50% or between 50 and 60% of our patients who had flap surgery during that period of time use it. And of those 47 people that used it, 15 of them actually were able to do a pre-test and a post-test measuring their conditioning before they started using it and then after they finished using it. And we actually found that their conditioning either stayed the same or improved, which was shocking to us, in 14 of the 15 cases. So we're just thrilled with those outcomes at this point. And, of course, it will deserve a larger study once the device is actually translated into other VA systems. We have, since we ran that study, we have been successful finding an industry partner. This industry partner is Action Trek over in western Minnesota, in Marshall, Minnesota. They build the Action wheelchair. Many of your viewers might be, or listeners, I should say, might be familiar with that Action wheelchair. And we're working on Generation 2 with them, and we'll be testing that a little bit here in the near future. We've actually put three other devices in three other VAs, and those groups are giving us feedback on the device now, seeing how their veterans like using it. Now, this device can also be used by anybody who is unable to access a gym. So right now, we think it's very appropriate for people who are in hospital in their room with COVID, because the device can be wiped down and used between patients. But it's really hard to take somebody with COVID and take them into a gym and do rehab with them there. So we're very excited about the device. Sorry that people have COVID, but we think this can help them also.
Very good, ma'am. We're speaking with Dr. Christine Olney, a nurse scientist at the Minneapolis VA. Chris, we've got just about 3 minutes left, and I know you wanted to tell us about the skin sight camera system. Can you briefly walk us through that?
Yes. Sorry I was so long-winded there. I'm very excited about the SkinSight camera system, too. So along with veterans who are at risk for pressure injury, there's some prodromal or pre-symptoms of developing a pressure injury. And one of the things that we ask veterans to do who sit in a wheelchair is to check their seated area every day to see if any of those maybe red spots or pimples that might show up before a pressure ulcer develops. And right now it's very difficult for somebody with a spinal cord injury to actually look at their bottom. And so we developed a camera system that actually put the lens of the camera or the camera itself in a little casement on the end of a selfie stick, and that data uploads to their phone or tablet, and they're able to look at their skin very carefully on that tablet or phone picture. They can blow it up on the device and see all areas of their skin. People who have lesions on their back or people who have diabetes mellitus might be wanting to check the bottoms of their feet. It just gives them the opportunity to really do an in-depth screening of their skin to make sure that they aren't developing these wounds that can be so devastating. So this device has also been translated to the industry. We have a partner in California. This is a veteran who has a spinal cord injury himself, and he owns the company called Paratroop. He's very interested in the device, and he's actually redesigned it, and we'll start testing that new device with veteran volunteers here in another month. So we're very excited about having that device available that came from our group, from people's needs that we were able to identify.
Ma'am, those two sound like very common sense devices that are very useful. The skin sight camera system to take a look at parts of your body that you can't see, and the arm cycle ergometer, which is like riding a bike only with your arms. Both sound like great devices. Ma'am, we've just got about a minute left. What keeps you and your team at MAID, the Minneapolis Adaptive Design Engineering Program, going full speed?
Well, I think I might have alluded to it in the earlier part of the show. We have an incredible team, and people in our team are very, very excited about what they do. We all have a common purpose. We're here to serve the veteran. And when you have a common purpose like that and you see the need, it's just so easy to work and work together for that common goal. The leadership is just fantastic. And I have to say, I think our VA is just, I'm very biased, I think it's just really well led, and they offer us that opportunity to be very innovative. So we're very fortunate.
Chris, I'd like to thank you for joining us today on Minnesota Military Radio, and encourage you to continue the great work that you're doing out at the Minneapolis VA. Those devices you've described today sound like they're very handy, very useful for our veterans, and thank you for joining us, ma'am.
Well, thank you, Tom, so much. I really appreciate you offering this opportunity to share our information.
That was Dr. Christine Olney, a nurse scientist with the Minneapolis VA healthcare system. Please stay with us. When we come back, we're going to meet a new Yellow Ribbon company here in Minnesota. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In a moment, we're going to meet one of Minnesota's newest Yellow Ribbon companies. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now here's Commissioner Larry Herkey.
The third Friday of September each year is Minnesota's recognition of the courage and sacrifices of the state's prisoners of war and missing in action. The POW MIA Recognition Day ensures that the words "you are not forgotten" will endure. More than 500,000 Americans have been captured and interned as prisoners of war since the American Revolution. Prisoners of war have been bravely endured the loss of very freedom that they fought to defend at the hands of their captors. Let us vow to never forget the sacrifices of our prisoners of war and their families have made. Their courageous efforts have helped build the strong foundation we have today, which continues to drive us forward. On this day, Minnesota will echo the creed inscribed on the black and white flags that fly in honor of America's prisoners of war and missing in action. And we renew our promise to our heroes that you are not forgotten. All gave some, and some gave all.
Thank you, Commissioner Herkey. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. As I said earlier, we're going to meet one of Minnesota's newest Yellow Ribbon companies. And to help us do that, our guest today and one of our producers is Annette Kuiper, Director of Military Outreach from the Minnesota Department of Military Affairs. Annette, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you, Tom. Actually, today we're going to meet one of our newest Yellow Ribbon counties, county that has been participating in our Yellow Ribbon program today.
Okay, and this one became a Yellow Ribbon county this month, is that correct?
Yes, on September 11th, Grant County was officially proclaimed a Yellow Ribbon county in the state of Minnesota, and this is the 26th county that has been achieved this high standard in the state.
So how many, we're up to 26 counties, how many companies now?
We have 72 companies. And we have 120 Yellow Ribbon communities across the state.
You've been busy traveling all over Minnesota for years, and now you've gotten out to Grant County, which is out by Elbow Lake, Minnesota.
Yes, and they've done an amazing job setting the standard for other counties to follow.
And I understand you've got a couple of guests you brought with us today, and one of them is the Grant County Veteran Service Officer.
Yes, Rob Larson. Actually, Rob was instrumental when he was with the Minnesota National Guard in helping get the Yellow Ribbon program started. So we're great. It's great that he's in a county veteran service officer role and leading Grant County through this. And he's also joined by another co-chair of their steering committee, and that's Sue Kalbike. And she's going to tell us a little bit more about Grant County and some of the things they're doing.
Rob and Sue, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you, Annette.
Sue, ladies first, so I'm going to start with you. I understand that you are the executive director of the Elbow Lake Area Chamber of Commerce.
And yes, I am, and that's kind of how this started. In that position, I'm always looking for ideas to help improve our community and make it friendly to all facets of people that may want to think about coming to Elbow Lake, either to visit or to live. And I approached the city council almost 2 years ago and asked if it would be all right if I looked into making Elbow Lake a Yellow Ribbon community. And they said, what would it cost and what do we have to do? And I said, doesn't cost anything and you do nothing. I'll take it from here. So then they were fine. Go ahead, they said. And so my first call was to the Veteran Service Office. Did not know we had a brand spanking new Veteran Service Officer here. And so we met, Rob and I, and started talking about this. And I was pretty tickled to hear he was familiar with the program. The only issue he had was because he was new, had not met the people yet. Well, I've lived here for a while. My family's had a cabin here since I was five, so I know a lot of people, just didn't understand the process.
And Rob, I understand you served many years in the military.
Yes. I'm originally an Iowa native. I served 14 years in the Iowa Army National Guard. Then after marrying my lovely wife, Tammy, I was hired by the Minnesota National Guard in 1999 as a training officer at the 34th DeVardi in Brooklyn Park. I served in a host of command and leadership positions in the Minnesota National Guard, including commander of the 125th Field Artillery out of New Ulm. I also served as the 1st Brigade Fire Support Officer and deployed with them to Iraq in 2005 to 2007. I had the pleasure of working with Annette at the deployment cycle support team there at state headquarters, and I retired as the Deputy Chief of Staff of Personnel of the Minnesota National Guard under General Nash in 2014. From there, I moved to Grant in Otter Tail County area, and after a couple years in Fort Living Room, I have found a new purpose in my life as the Grant County Veteran Service Officer and Executive Director of this fine Yellow Ribbon organization.
Well, Rob, congratulations on becoming the Grant County County Veteran Service Officer. Just last week, we did a whole show with Greg Peterson, the president of the Minnesota Association of County Veteran Service Officers, and got some history and some legislative updates, and all of that information can be listened to on podcast format at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. And Rob, I think we're going to have a good time getting you on the show maybe in the future to talk about county veteran service officers. But today we want to talk about becoming a Yellow Ribbon County. We're speaking with Rob Larson, Sue Kolbeck from the Grant County Yellow Ribbon County on Minnesota Military Radio. And Annette, I just want to ask you, sounds like Sue got through to you and she became under your influence and you went to work to try to allow them to become your newest county, Yellow Ribbon County in Minnesota. How did that go?
Well, our county program is very similar to our community and company program, but they have unique areas that they have to address, not only the county as an employer, but looking at all of their social services within a county and, of course, connecting in with all the military support services in their county. So they had to go through the same arduous state process to develop a really comprehensive action plan with commitments in each area that needed to pass our state action plan review board. And let me tell you, Tom, this Grant County has really set the bar high. They have several commitments and engaged many areas within their county to make commitments to service members, veterans, and military families.
Thanks, Annette. And Sue, was that a big job working with Annette to become the newest Yellow Ribbon County in Minnesota?
Well, it does look overwhelming if you look at it, but it goes back to the old saying my dad always said, and how do you eat an elephant? Just one bite at a time, and that's exactly how we approached it. And, I come from a family of military people. My grandfather was a Navy veteran. My dad was Air Force, and my cousin was a Vietnam veteran that was wounded there and continued to have issues right up to this past week. He was actually going to come to our proclamation ceremony, but was having surgery to have shrapnel removed out of his jaw. But because of my contact with the military, I've always had sort of a passion for what's becoming of our veterans and their families. We're very concerned with the families, and so we've tried to involve people throughout the county that would be helpful to both veterans and their families.
And Rob, working with Sue must have been just like working beside one of your former sergeant majors putting this whole project together.
You better believe it. I listened to what she had to say, and I just kind of nudged her in the right direction, and she made it happen.
Just like being back in the service, right, Rob?
Yeah, a little different. You have to talk a little differently, but Sue, Sue's quite a good NCO. I mean, that's kind of her role here, and she's done a great job.
And then, of course, you had Annette there to guide you through the process.
Well, she's the general, yeah.
Uh-oh. Annette, you just got promoted, but we'll take care of that tomorrow. Rob and Sue, We have to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about Minnesota's newest Yellow Ribbon County. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be back in a moment. Well, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In this segment, we're going to continue our chat about Grant County becoming our newest Yellow Ribbon County here in Minnesota. We've been speaking with Annette Kuiper, our Yellow Ribbon lady, who is the Director of Military Outreach from the Minnesota Department of Military Affairs. And we've met Rob Larson, who is the County Veteran Service Officer for Grant County, and Sue Kolbeck, who is the Executive Director of the Elbow Lake Area Chamber of Commerce. And Sue, I want to come to you. I understand that you did a survey out in Grant County to try to find out what your priorities should be as a Yellow Ribbon County.
Well, we sure did, and we did it both online and just actual pieces of paper, and we went to the veterans and asked what did they need, how could we be of service to them, says we did want to spend a lot of time working on projects that were going to be of no use to anybody. And when the survey came back, one of the things that was obvious to us is that we have an aging bunch of veterans out here, and they were more interested in what kind of access there was to aging and senior care resources for veterans. And that includes things like in-home care, transportation to medical facilities, things like that. We also needed to look at suicide awareness and prevention efforts and medical and mental health resources out here in Grant County. Substance abuse and chemical dependency prevention were something of interest to a lot of them. And then also state and federal benefits and resources. And of course, Rob's great at providing that information to them. We wanted to bring this program to the community and make the community aware and gain their support in moving forward as the Yellow Ribbon Group was being developed and now goes forward with putting our plans together. And then, of course, we wanted to improve access to quality employment. These days, with everything that's been going on, you always have to look for quality jobs, not just fast food or some of this minimum wage kind of jobs. That we want our veterans to have great jobs that have great benefits.
So it sounds like that survey got you very well focused on your efforts to become Yellow Ribbon County, working alongside of Annette.
Yeah, it sure did. It was a great way to give us direction.
Now, Rob, I want to bring you back into the conversation here. We have our County Veteran Service Officers on the show every 3 or 4 weeks, and as I mentioned earlier, we had a whole show with them last week. But when I heard those the priorities that Grant County's putting together, that sounds like what we've been talking about for years for anything veteran-related. If you've got any questions, any issues, we've said they need to go talk to their County Veteran Service Officer, and of course you're the Grant County Veteran Service Officer, so you're the perfect partner for Sue because you're working on these issues all the time anyway.
Yes, Tom, that's exactly right. You know, we encourage all our veterans, as well as currently serving military in our county, to make a phone call to myself as their very first step. You know, we're kind of the hub of the wheel in our county, so to speak, and, you know, we may not be able to actually resolve their problem, but we certainly have connections to help them access the benefits and resources in our area.
And Rob, one of the things Sue mentioned was employment. This has been kind of, I call it a lost COVID year, because that pandemic has caused a lot of unemployment, including a lot of veteran unemployment. Are you seeing that out in Grant County as well?
Tom, there's no question that the people in our county are suffering economically, both due to poor farming economy as well as also COVID-19. In some ways, this has been kind of a 1-2 punch for many families, and in some ways, this has also been a benefit in that our farmers were not necessarily shut down by COVID, you know, and they've been able to continue their farming operations through all of this. So, you know, and as we all know, our farmers employ a number of people to help them manage their farm operations.
And Rob, one of the other things we've been talking about this month, it's Suicide Prevention Month, and we've been talking about the County Veteran Service Officers and the American Legion and some of the other veteran service organizations encouraging everybody to do buddy checks with their veterans to make sure that they're not experiencing any kind of depression or problems.
Yes, that's very important. You know, we don't want any veterans out there to be alone and not have access to help. And unfortunately, we have a number of veterans that are isolated, that are may not be connected with their fellow veterans or veteran service organizations. And those are the people that we want to reach out to through public service announcements and information to make sure and make sure their neighbors and their friends know where to get help if, you know, if there's an issue that we need to help with.
And help is available. And once again, your first stop is always the county service officer, because you make it your business to know where the resources are to help all of your veterans.
Absolutely.
Thank you, sir. Sue, I want to come back to you. We just got a couple minutes left. What advice would you have for other counties who might be considering becoming a yellow ribbon county?
Well, each county is going to be different based on their population and are they rural, are they urban, whatever. But I think the first call I would make, as you said, would be the veteran service officer and get them involved right away. And then also on a state level, make use of people like Annette who can give you direction and guidance, and between you, you'll get to where you need to be. And then on a local level, involve as many people as you can find. I contacted everyone from hospital healthcare workers to county offices such as public health, businesses. One of the first people I called is an attorney that I know is a veteran and very concerned with veteran issues. And he's come on board and helped us got our, just recently, our nonprofit status was approved by the state. And we are going to be talking to various people throughout the county, because each community has its own group of movers and shakers. You know, one of the things we were also able to do, and I think it makes us unique, is that in our group of heroes, we've addressed not just the veterans, but we've also included first responders and EMS and those kind of folks. So our sheriff's department, our fire departments throughout the county are all considered part of our group that we are trying to provide support and help for both them and their families.
Well, Rob and Sue, I want to congratulate you on doing all the work to become a Yellow Ribbon County out in Grant County. And I want to thank you both for joining us today.
Thank you very much,
Thank you, Tom.
Annette, another great Yellow Ribbon Network member, Grant County. Rob and Sue sound like they can get done just about anything needs to be done out that way.
Yes, they are going to be great advocates for that area, as well as kind of just role models for other counties and how this can be done.
Annette, we got about 3 minutes left today. I wonder if you could give us an update on the Yellow Ribbon program here in Minnesota. You've been at it for a lot of years. What's in the future? What are you? What's on your chessboard for the rest of 20 and for 2021?
Well, that's a great question, Tom, because we're really looking forward, not only with our new leadership, our new adjutant general, but we've also recently brought on brand new soldier and family readiness specialists who are going to be spreading across the state. And then our Yellow Ribbon Regional Outreach Coordinator, Rachel Johnson, who really was instrumental in helping support Rob and Sue and other counties in greater Minnesota and communities in greater Minnesota who want to become Yellow Ribbon. She's really helping us get our Yellow Ribbon networks and our communities into regions so that we can make sure Yellow Ribbon networks that are in the same area are working together and sharing resources and knowing what those resources are. So we've been working hard on that, as well as making sure that we connect all of our Yellow Ribbon companies to the local Yellow Ribbon networks and make sure that they're sharing in the resources and helping in their areas that they serve. So that's really exciting. We also are doing kind of a look throughout the state to identify that we have been able to, our Yellow Ribbon networks are able to meet gaps in services and if there's any other gaps we need to fill. So that's another thing that we're working on into the future.
Annette, one of the things I've been watching for years is over in Washington County, You've got a lot of cities within the county that are yellow ribbon, and as well as Washington County. And then, of course, you've got some yellow ribbon companies on the east side over there. And they're kind of a textbook case of how they can all work together to take care of our veterans and take care of their families. And I'm sure you talk about Washington County and all, how they work with all of the new prospective companies, cities, and counties out there.
Yes, both Washington and Dakota County are really models for how the county gathers up all the Yellow Ribbon communities in their county, and they all work together. And the county is able to support them with resources, sometimes funding, that type of thing, to ensure. And it's really the goal of our Yellow Ribbon networks is to make sure no veteran or service member or military family feels isolated or alone in our state, and that they know about resources that are available to them.
Well, Annette, it's been fun today meeting the folks from Grant County, our newest Yellow Ribbon County in Minnesota, and it's always great to talk to you. I'm looking forward to it, and I can't wait to see who you're going to bring us next.
All right. Well, we just congratulate Grant County and Sue and Rob for leading the way.
Thanks, Annette. That was Annette Kuiper, the Director of Military Outreach from the Minnesota Department of Military Affairs on Minnesota Military Radio. We have one mention today. The Minnesota Department of Revenue is reminding Minnesota service members to take advantage of a refundable military tax credit before it expires. The credit for military service in a combat zone for service in 2016 will expire October 15, 2020 for most qualifying service members. And this credit is worth $120 per month or partial months served. So if you served in a combat zone during 2016, there are thousands of you yet that haven't claimed your credit, and you've got to do that and fill out Minnesota's Form M99, Credit for Military Service in a Combat Zone, and have it postmarked by October 15th, 2020, in order to get that credit. So please check that out and get it in. We're just about out of time. Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Christine Olney from the Minneapolis VA Healthcare Center, Rob Larson and Sue Kalbike from the Grant County Yellow Ribbon Network, Commissioner Larry Herkey, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Sean Mankey. Please join us next week as we get an update from the 1st Brigade's Red Bulls on the upcoming deployment and check in with the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
Minnesota Military Radio is a production of iHeartMedia, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Minneapolis VA, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, and the Minnesota National Guard. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phelan Partners Limited, a merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is a life member of the American Legion, VFW, Vietnam Veterans of America, and the DAV. For podcasts and the latest updates, follow us at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.